Welcome to the TTPOA Podcast, a podcast for SWAT officers, military, and all first responders. We'll be talking training, tactics, and leadership with the best subject matter experts around. Here are your hosts, Derek and Brandon.
Yeah. What's up, guys? Welcome to the next episode of the TTPOA Podcast. Man, today we are sitting down with Rob Vogel.
Yes.
What is that, 17-time national champion?
24, I think, if I had to count. But
Excuse me, 24.
Shit, we thought Tom Brady had a lot. But,
how many time world champion?
World, I guess, three, technically.
Oh, just three?
Just three. It's real complicated how they do that, all that with different disciplines and everything.
But just so you know, you have three more than I have.
Three more?
Yeah, and 24 more national titles than I have.
Okay. All right.
So,
well,
same here.
So for the guys that don't know you, Rob, man, kind of tell us a little bit about your background and what you do now.
Yeah, sure. You want me to?
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I mean, in short, like I said, my name is Robert Vogel. I grew up in Ohio on a farm, and I was just shooting and hunting since I was a real little boy. That was my interest. I was probably about 15 when I decided I wanted to be a police officer. And so from the police side of things, I went into like a two-year academy program out of high school, got hired at 21. I've been a cop really since then. I'm 39, so whatever that is. Since then, in one form or another, I did pretty much all of my 20s. I was a full-time cop in Canton, Ohio, which is it's not one of the bigger cities. The only thing it's known for is having the national championships
and
the Coondog trials. But did pretty much 8.5 years there, full-time cop, second shift, normal stuff. I was the firearms guy for the department, and we had a joint county SWAT team. I was on that for most of the time that I was there. And I left 2012 to do the whole competitive professional shooter teacher thing, which I really started that before I was even in the academy. It was a teenager, and I used to read all the gun magazines cover to cover and read about competition and just really got into it and started going to matches out of high school. And just, I did well. I started winning some state championships within a year or two and going to nationals a few years later, winning, ended up made top five and then won nationals sometimes. It just got to the point where, people started asking me to do classes, and at first I'm like, early, mid-20s, a little intimidated by that. But, I saw the opportunity, so I started doing it. And it just got to the point where, I couldn't get enough time off work. I mean, I was being asked. I won the World Shoot in 2011. That was kind of a big year for me. And just the demand was there, and so I left. And largely what I do now, I travel around. I teach a lot of classes.
Just do that.
A little private range in my house. I have a lot of people come there and just different places, sell some product, things like
that. So, what moment did you know you're like, man, this is my calling. I'm going to be a professional shooter. I'm going to kind of give up this career path of law enforcement and doing the SWAT thing, and I'm going to go.
Yeah, it was always on my mind. Probably the very first match I went to when I was 19. And I'd been shooting handguns seriously for 3 or 4 years before. But I had never competed against anybody. So, I mean, I know I'm a lot better than my friends and family that aren't doing it. Like, how am I going to do it? I go to a real match. And I went to
Just real fast, just unscrew that thing and turn that microphone up just a little bit. So, hey, help him out a little bit there with it, Brendan. Sorry, guys, a little technical difficulty here.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. We're going to get you set up. Okay. Don't mind us. We're not professional podcasters.
I always got to figure out every microphone.
Oh, there you go. That sounds way better.
Is that better?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so just.
I can work the boom mic.
Wow. Sorry.
When you get like if it's about here.
Yeah, put a little bit more closer to your face. No, you can move it. Yeah, sorry, man. We had totally just screwed you up there.
No, I'm going to start over, but.
No, you're good. You're good. So 19.
Yeah, so, I mean, as far as like the moment I realized that's what I wanted to do. I was like 19. I went to my first match, and I had never competed against anybody. But I've been practicing for years, and it was a local match, and there was actually 19 people there. I remembered it was like September 29, 2001, and
That's great.
I actually ended up winning the match by quite a bit, and I'm thinking, oh wow, I'm 19, and I won this, and then that was probably the moment that, like, the light bulb went off in my head that, maybe I could be really good at this. Maybe I could be, like, a national champion or something if I just keep going. And so I did, and, like, later that year, I won a state match, and I beat the guy that was third at the Nationals that year. And so I just thought, I'm going to go, as far as I can with this. It was more definitely I wanted to be a champion. I kind of had it in the back of my mind that maybe I could make a living somehow someday, but for that time, it was just being a national champion or whatnot.
So you went into your academy. Were you top shot in your academy?
Yeah. that was a whole other story because the instructors were
angry that you were there.
They were some older guys at that time. Oh, this was 20 years ago or more. And they just, I was trying to just put my nose down and not say anything. But everybody else is like, oh, he's a competition shooter guy. And yeah, they gave me a little bit of a hard time. But it was, looking back now, I can kind of laugh about it.
All right. So you got the niche for teaching, I guess, from teaching your department and your guys?
Really? I mean, I did a little bit of that, but it was just, it wasn't really even that. I started when I was just winning a lot of these competitions, and even before I won nationals, the people in the area, they just knew I, you know, was one of the top shooters, and they just asked me. I remember that I'm still friends with a guy that, like, hey, you ever thought about doing a class? I'll put together 6 or 8 guys and come out and teach us what you know. And that was like in 2000, that was 15 years ago. And I kind of drew up a little program, went out there and did it. And then from that point, I just kind of kept going. So
you're like super nervous to do that?
I was a little bit. I mean, I had done private lessons and stuff. But it was my first time in front of like a group of people teaching shooting. So, I mean, I think I did fine, but it was obviously, you know, far cry from I've done it, you know, hundreds and hundreds of times now. So it feels more natural.
So what do you teach more now? Do you teach more the civilian side or more LE?
I mean, it's a mixture. Most of what I do is open enrollment, though, so it can be...
Just whoever, right?
Just whoever signs up. I actually did a class in Texas. It didn't seem like I've made it to Texas a lot in the last couple of years, but I just did one 2 weeks ago in Grandview, I think, south of...
Okay.
Or an hour south of Dallas. Yeah. And then there was, you know, a dozen guys or so, and I think maybe 4 or 5 of them were cops, and then the other guys were just shooters that... to get better and all that. So it's a mixture of people. And I'll get some department gigs here and there, and gotten some military, you know, worked with different, you know, special forces groups and whatnot. So just kind of whatever comes my way. And out of the country, I've been out of the country quite a bit. I've always liked doing that. So whatever comes my way, I just go after.
You strike me as a guy that just like, just whatever, man. I'm just kind of easygoing. I like to shoot bullets.
I really do. I like to shoot. I like to teach. And to me, it's more just skill based. I mean, I'm not foreign to tactics, but I'm teaching people how to shoot a handgun fast and accurately.
So if I go to your class, what are you offering? Like what are you teaching? Like,
well, I mean, my class here that I'm teaching, which is the most common class that I do, world class pistol skills is what I call it. So mm-hmm. And it's just meant to be a class to get you to shoot better, faster, and more accurately. And coming from the competition side of things too, you know, there's the balance of accuracy and speed, and we, the competition guys, and that's a broad when I say competition, because there's 3 or 4 competitions, it's complicated, but the balance of accuracy and speed is a little different. So mm-hmm. rather than doing a lot of part-time stuff mm-hmm. where, you know, hey, this is your drill, you got 10 seconds to do it. As long as you do it under 10 seconds, you're good. So if you do it in 4 seconds or 9 seconds, it doesn't matter. It's all about your hits. Well, that's not really the way that I've operated. It's faster with the same hits is obviously better. Mm-hmm. And if you're not rewarding that, if you're not operating under a system that rewards that, then there's really no incentive to be faster.
Yeah.
And so it's a lot more time plus type of scoring, which is more common, but it's traditionally wasn't real so, common with law enforcement.
So how are you teaching a guy to go fast? How does he go faster?
How is it? Well, I mean, go faster and shoot.
That's a broad question.
Yeah, but I mean, that's like everybody, that whole fast is like, okay, what do you mean by fast?
A lot of it.
And I was kind of being like joking, and you couldn't see my air quotes here.
Now, a lot of it is, and some people disagree with it because people say, you know, be smooth and speed will come. Well, it will come to a certain point and then it will stop coming. And a lot of people are kind of taught that you shoot whatever you're shooting, the drills or whatever, and the minute that you're going so fast that you're not getting perfect hits, then you're committing a mortal sin and you should slow down and stop. And you will only get so far that way. Mm-hmm. You have to log at least a certain amount of time in pushing beyond your comfort zone in order to expand your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And then you step back to that consistent speed, and now your comfort zone, your normal speed is somebody else's fast speed. Mm-hmm. And then you got an advantage on them. Because you're going to be a lot more consistent. So a lot of it is just being measurable. And a lot of, not everything I do, but most of the stuff that we do, I mean, it's measurable. Like you're mm-hmm. doing this drill. This is your time. This is your hits. This is your score. This is what you have. Now you're doing it a second, third, fourth time. You're trying to beat that score. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not just kind of shooting a lot of rounds down range and it's just, oh, it's whatever.
So if a guy comes to your class, are you, breaking down stance, grip, and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, usually, and that's the very first part.
Well, your grip is different, right?
I get asked about the grip a lot.
Yeah, because I'm a shooter. I'm the range master for my department, so I'm always trying to gain knowledge and kind of look at what you guys are doing.
Sure.
And I think there's a video on YouTube of you kind of explain your grip and how high you have it and the angle of your support hand down on the gun.
It's an aggressive style. I mean, I do, especially with a Glock or with a lot of the polymer guns, they have a longer trigger guard. Just the nature of the gun, you can get higher and further up on them. So it works a little better with those. But it is more of an aggressive. You're using more muscle so that you have to use less finesse. That's the best way that I could describe it. And it's just because, when you're under pressure and you're nervous and everything, it's just the aggressive style, in my opinion, works better than the more the finesse style. And it's just.
Well, you're training dudes for worst case stressful scenarios, right?
To shoot under pressure, right? Yeah. I mean, regardless of what that might be.
So do you think the competition stuff translates into law enforcement now that you've had both sides and you were younger?
I definitely do. I mean, I think a lot of guys, more guys than ever now, will tell you that it does. I mean, to some extent, there's how many ways is there to put pressure on somebody while they're shooting a real gun?
Yeah.
There's only so many ways. You can get on the range and yell at them and say this, but when you're in competition and, especially at the higher levels and you've got a lot riding on it and, at the end of the day, there's a list from one all the way down to the end and your name's on that list and anybody looks at that can see that and there's no getting out of that. And, to me personally, some of the world championships and nationals, when it came down to that, I've felt a lot of pressure. And I guess because you always know, and not that I have, a ton of experience with law enforcement. I was, full-time 8.5 years, was on a SWAT team, and I did some things. And, a lot of times there, to me personally, it was, you didn't really know what was coming. And so there's almost like a little bit of a comfort in that. There's a little bit of nervousness in that, but a little bit, it might just be okay here, as opposed to I know I'm going in this door, and I know somebody's going to, shoot at me or something like that.
Pressure is pressure. Stress is stress.
It really is to some extent. And the idea of it is just to make the gun handling, the shooting, the pressing the trigger, seeing the sights, the grip, all that stuff, just totally subconscious, second nature, to where you don't have to think about that. And the competition guys that are really in it, they do that a lot, and they're really good at that. Mm-hmm. So the idea is it just frees up your brain to think of all the things that you need to think about in that time. And, there's a never-ending world of the whole, tactician versus the games.
The gamer.
And all that.
Yeah.
And, there's so many different arguments.
But you have a special skill and a skill set, and yours is pulling the trigger.
Yeah, I focus more on pure shooting. How fast and accurate can you shoot? And that's primarily what I teach. Now, I'm teaching that. Obviously, we're doing things with cover and movement and things that are practical, but a lot of it is... it's just learning to be a better shooter, because that's the one thing that you can't fake. You can't fake that, and it's very objective. And like with tactics, and I'm not foreign to tactics. The kind of the debatable thing with tactics is it is subjective. Mm-hmm. Not going to argue the importance. I'm not saying it's not more important sometimes, but it is subjective. A lot of times you can't really prove. It's situational, circumstantial. Is this better than this? It depends.
Yeah.
Good shooting is really not black and white. This is what you can do. It's this is how much weight you can lift. This is how many pull-ups you can do.
This is what your target looks like.
You can't fake that.
There it is.
And, are you shooting a pistol or are you shooting a shotgun?
Yeah.
I can't tell which one you're shooting.
Yeah. So that's more what I focus
on. So who are some guys that are that you look up to in the industry that when you came up, or guys right now that you're currently like, hey, man, this guy, man, he's really good. I've learned from these guys and stuff like that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, coming up, obviously, I read all the gun magazines, some of the big names, mostly Rob Latham. I got, Dave Savigny. If I had to pick one guy, probably Dave Savigny. And he was the Glock guy for years. Yeah. Just crushed everything, ruled everything. And he's about 19 years older than me. And when we're still friends. I don't see him as much anymore. We shot together. But I had to probably say two guys. There's a lot of other guys, Todd Jarrett, Jerry Barnhart, some guys back in the day.
And I had a pleasure of training with Rob Latham.
Yeah, he comes out to TTPOA
every year. He comes out once a year.
Yep.
Yeah. Right, and it's scheduled years in advance because you know his schedule's out of control.
It's already on the books.
Yeah, yeah. So it's on the books, and that class fills up fast.
Yeah. No, I bet.
So man, I had the pleasure of training with him, and man, I'm telling you right now, I learned so much from that dude that I'm taking back and now that I'm using at my department since I teach and train all the firearm stuff. And
yeah, Rob's a legend. There's no doubt. I mean, he goes way back and he's still out there doing it.
And he's funny.
Yeah.
Dude, that makes it even better. Yeah, he's funny. So what I like about him is, and I've never trained with you, so I don't know how your classes run or how you do it, but we will work on a drill. He'll show us something and then we'll shoot it against him. Or we'll shoot it as a class, and then the top person, you know, that wins that drill in the class, will shoot it against him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, he'll turn around, not face the target, put his hands up, you know, as we're facing the target, just because he knows he could kick the shit out of us, you know, whenever he wanted to. But I saw him lose.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It can happen.
Dude, not a lot, but you see him lose, and then you see him flip that switch from like, okay, I'm done. I'm done playing now. He would do it again and just absolutely smoke that dude. I beat him on one event. It was the accuracy drill.
Okay.
You know, where you shoot like five rounds back up, five rounds back up. You keep going back and And we had to get like the tape measure out and then because you know, everybody's getting all this shit and stuff. And I was like, Please. Yeah. So, but,
yep.
Yeah. And that's the idea. You know, you kind of got to put your site. I do demo the vast majority of what I do and everything. And, you know, it's one of
As a firearms instructor, when I teach my basic firearms instructor class for guys that want to be instructors, I tell them if you can't demo the shit that you're asking your dudes to do, you are not going to do well as an instructor.
No. Yeah. I mean, there's a certain level of respect that goes with that a lot of guys are gonna kind of need, I think.
Yeah,
they need to see that.
This is it validates you and who you are and the stuff that you're trying to teach, right?
Yeah,
and it's pressure. You gotta step up and perform.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, a lot of that. Yeah, for sure. And that's getting so much of it is a mental thing too. I mean, just getting it in your head right. Like you literally have to convince yourself that you do better under pressure.
Yeah,
better. You know.
Yeah,
and then you would if nobody's watching. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that might come easier than others, but it's a lot of that. And like, you know, you said, just be able to flip that switch. Cause that's, somebody said to me a long time ago with shooting, he said, there's in relation probably more to the competition thing, but there's great shooters and then there's great competitors. Mm-hmm. And there's a little bit of a difference. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're especially, you know, nationals and everything's on the line, everything, there's some guys that can on average pull it off a little more than other guys that you know, they might,
some guys just crumble, man.
Other guys. Yeah. I mean, you might be able to do it on a, you know, like when nobody's watching or like their high skill level, it might be the same, same level, but like, are you going to do that when it matters?
Yeah. We see a lot with like SWAT tryout, when it comes to the shooting part and man, they've done well when they're out there just practicing.
Yeah.
Now the team's watching and the pressure gets up or you go to a competition. The pack timer comes out and
The timers.
Or guys do really well on quals. And then you're like, okay, let's do some running. Let's do some this. And you're like, whoa, what happened to you? That pressure, man, rise or fall. And it's valuable. So that's what gets me when the guys in the tack world go, oh, that's just gamer stuff. It's to some point, but there's also shooting a gun, being accurate, being smooth, being able to think. That's what all these things are doing. It's gathering. Yeah, I'm not going to do this per se in my SWAT world, but presenting the gun and getting all that is the exact same.
But running a gun is running a gun.
It is.
So when we trained, both of him and I went through Jelinski's class.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and he at the very end of that 2-day class, mm-hmm. he sets up that little shooting competition drill. Right?
Yeah.
And running a gun is running a gun. I don't care if you're running a competition or if you're running a gun in a police environment, SWAT environment. If you can move, shoot, and, you know, communicate in our world, but in your world, move and shoot.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, right? you're stringing a lot of things together.
Yeah.
A lot of times it's the idea as opposed to, you know, a lot of people don't do a lot of training beyond standing on the line and just shooting one target. When you start, that's where I see, and again, this is very generalized, guys that shoot competition, probably that skill set, is when you put a lot of things together. When you have multiple targets, wide transitions, movement, especially when you have moving targets, disappearing targets, different positions, that's where, you know, the competition guys just do that more. And so when you throw that stuff in there,
you know, it's confusing. I think if you came into our world now, being so far removed from it, right, it would be confusing for you. I've shot one pistol competition where you had all the movements, right? And you had this, like the lanes, you had them go down, you had these little holes to shoot through.
Yeah.
I got so freaking confused about what to do. You know, I'm just like, okay, I can shoot this target here, but then I can, if I camp my body this way, I can see that target and shoot there. And I'm just like, and by the end of it, I was like, I don't know what I just did. Yeah. Right. I hope I hit something.
Was that, what kind of competition was that?
It was so long ago. It was,
I don't know if it was like an organized one or.
Yeah, it was. It was an organized one. I can't remember. It was so long ago, but I felt like the biggest goofball in the world because, you know, they walked us through the stage and it was like two here, and then you moved up like this little window thing, and then you moved here, and you could shoot this and this.
Sure.
And I remember all the guys that were into it, they're like walking through, and they're dry firing, and they're you can see them practicing, and then they would walk off to the side, and you see them doing it again.
Going in their heads.
And of course, I'm like,
what's he doing?
Should I be doing that? Like, I'm just gonna go shoot shit. Like,
sure, yeah. And there's no doubt about it. There's a gaming aspect to it. I mean, if you want to be good at competition, there's a lot of, like what you were just saying, a lot of the rehearsal and things that you would really have to do to perform at a high level in that. But at the end of the day, I mean, the biggest benefit crossover with the whole real life law enforcement thing is just the skill set of making all that stuff subconscious with your shooting and doing what you're supposed to do without thinking about it.
You know, the organization does a SWAT competition every year. So it's shooting, physical, you know, activities and things like that. But most of the time for the environment that we're in, it's, goes down to accuracy because you miss.
Yeah,
you miss a target. You got five bullets, five targets.
Yeah,
and you miss one. Okay, that's a minute. Well, damn, you can't outrun that minute. So, speed is good, but I don't have to get out and bam and hit that target. It's like it's there. Okay, bam.
Yeah,
and so it's a little bit different. And there's thinking, there's teamwork, there's all kinds of stuff. So it's a little bit different, but the whole point is thinking with your mind and being able to, okay, let me pause here. What's going on? How are we doing this and stuff?
Yeah. I mean, you're doing stuff, like I say, you're shooting under pressure. And like I said, a lot of it comes down to how you score. I mean, when you, the missed penalties are heavier, you got to adjust. That's what I tell people. I've been a lot of places and wherever to go train some SWAT team or something, they want me to do this qualification. And so I just, how is this scored? And if it's scored this way, where you're going to put a heavy premium on really heavy penalties on missing or something, I got to be able to like flip this little switch in my brain. Like, this is what I got to do now. This is what I have to do here. I go over here. Okay. This is what I got to do here. And I think that's a big skill set for a shooter to have. And I think we're human beings. We can differentiate between different situations.
Right.
Obviously, there's some things you're going to do how you're trained, but we're not robots. We're not like, okay, we do this. I'm going to only be able to do this.
Yes.
Some people can adjust better than others.
Yeah.
And just, you know, depending on what they're supposed to do.
How do you train that speed versus accuracy and try to combine those in your courses?
I guess a lot of it kind of depends on what I'm doing. How I've trained was, you know, obviously finding that speed accuracy balance. For instance, like IDPA, and whether you even shoot IDPA or go by the rules, it doesn't really even matter. But I mentioned that because of like the scoring system, it's time plus, right? So it's very simple to understand. Whatever you shoot, if you're shooting one target or 20 targets, your score is your time. If you keep them in that 8-inch circle, you have no time added. You start outside of that, you got 1 second added, 3 seconds on the edge, 5 seconds for a miss. I think that's actually a pretty good balance of accuracy and speed. So a lot of times I will run, even if I'm doing a cop class or whatnot, and they have their, whatever their target is, I'll usually figure something like that. Like, okay, your score is your time. Okay, if you're outside of this zone, you kind of have to look at the target and tell. Mm-hmm. If you're outside of this zone, we're going to add, you know, a second or whatever it's going to be. And then that's based off of that. So it is. So you're going for the best score, and the score is not a competition only thing. It's just performance. It's a way of measuring performance. Some people, I think, have it in their head. Well, if you're doing it's a competition, it's not necessarily. It's just you're measuring it now. So usually something like that. And again, it's how much do you want to put on the missed penalties? That's there's not a right or wrong answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, okay, some people think like, okay, a second if you're out here is fair. Some people, oh no, it should be 5 seconds, or some people maybe less. It just depends. When I look at things from the speed aspect, the one thing I always say to people, the vast majority of us, when we go to the range, what are we doing? I mean, we are shooting at paper, plastic, cardboard targets that are standing still indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
So when you start making those targets, one thing we don't usually do a lot of, like, make those targets move and go away very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell people, okay, you can just slow down and get your hits. And in real life, like, is it even going to be there? Is it going to be there in 2 or 3 seconds? It might only be there for 1 second.
I mean,
I don't claim to be some major gunfight expert, but I've watched a lot of film and videos. And like, you can see, okay, in this instance, like, literally bad guy was there for a second and a half.
Yeah.
And he was moving
across
6 feet, and he was gone. So if you're slow, you can't even shoot.
Yeah.
You have to be fast. And I do one drill with a swinging target. A lot of places don't have them, but where it's basically swings out and back, and how many hits can you get in the center zone? And so you literally have like a second and a half. I usually give people 2 swings, maybe 3. but on 1 swing out and back, like, yeah, second, quarter, second and a half. Well, I mean, that in real life, right. That might be all you got, and how many hits can you get in that? And that's actually my favorite drill to do with cops, where I can do it at.
Yeah.
But it just puts that whole speed thing.
Yeah, because
in perspective,
the opportunity is like a window. It shuts really quick, and it opens really quick, and then it shuts. And
it's just like, even if you're doing it on a standstill target, I'm like, okay, dude, you got 3 seconds to shoot this drill. And he draws and shoots, and he shoots a little bit over 3 seconds. Maybe he does 4 seconds. Well, the target was still there.
Right.
He still was able to hit it. It didn't. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, when you can make, you know, just a few little drills where I get it to where the target actually moves and goes away, then I think that's kind of what opens people's eyes.
Are you a big, do you dry fire a lot?
I do. I've always done that a lot, really. I would say probably, if I were to measure practice, I would measure it more by the time you spend with a gun in your hand more than how many rounds you shoot.
Yeah. I think everyone who's at the level you are has that same mindset dry firing. So, and being a young guy, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. As a young guy, you're like, dude, this sucks.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be like putting bullets down range. Yeah. Like, I want that instant feedback. I know what I'm doing, if I'm hitting steel or if I'm shooting up close at paper or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know what? Now I make the kids dry fire the shit out of their guns.
Yeah.
I give them homework. Yeah. During a basic class, they have homework to give me at least 10 to 15 good dry fires. And we show them the proper way that I think that they need to do it.
Yeah.
And then if they get to like number 9 and they screw up, you gotta start all over again, right? But, you know, like, even talking to those guys we talked to the other day, they were dry fired.
Yeah.
Like, those guys dry fire. Those spec op guys, they dry fire because they can't afford to miss a shot in training. They can't afford to miss a shot, you know, in the real world.
Yeah, that's huge. I mean, a lot of it is figuring it out. If and when, and some people don't figure it out. When you figure it out and prove to yourself and you can really feel that it's making you better, then in my mind, it becomes not boring anymore. It's getting better is not boring. So,
oh, absolutely.
So some people never really figure it out. They just, okay, I'm going to go through the motions. I'm going to do this for 15 minutes. But I don't know. I was able to figure it out and prove it, and I could feel it. So I pick that gun up, and I draw the gun, reload the gun, what I'm doing. It's just, it's repetition. It's like playing a musical instrument. Like,
do you teach new users or like intermediate, or like, do you have to have some basic?
No, I mean, it's all levels. I teach. It's the majority of guys probably somewhere in the middle. I mean, for the private type stuff, I've had people that didn't have much experience at all.
Yeah, but don't you like doing, like, don't you like teaching the new user, like, never held a gun?
Yeah, because I do.
They have actually no bad habits.
You can teach them a lot more, and they're like, oh, yeah, wow, that's, I didn't know that. And so that's. That is cool. To me, I guess it's as long as I get over time, like a mixture, I think if I only ever taught one level of people, then that would probably get a little bit older and I'd kind of want a different level. So, I mean, I get anywhere from beginner to intermediate to some guys that can really shoot really well. Obviously I see all that and it keeps it interesting.
Yeah. All right. So who are you affiliated with now? You have your own training company, correct?
Yeah.
You have sponsors.
I've got a few sponsors yet.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm a little more independent now than I used to be, which I kind of really like it that way. And I still compete. I don't really compete as much as I used to. I've done it for 20 years. And I've got some injuries and things. I can't maybe move around my knee or whatnot to make excuses. But but so I am still competing, but I'm not as heavily involved in that as I used to be. It's definitely more in the training realm and with classes and nowadays, like, you know, if I get an opportunity to teach a class over shooting a match, I generally will pick the class.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've got a few sponsors. Burn Apparel has been good to me. And yeah.
What about your sights?
My sights are, yeah, that's probably my main product, really. Vogel Dynamics Glock sights. I actually have them for M&Ps too, but it's mostly Glocks that sell. I've had them for 5 or 6 years. And yeah, those I'm really big on. You know, the better of a shooter you are, the more you're going to notice a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And equipment.
Is it a thin blade? Is it wide?
It's a thin.
Wide notch, thin blade.
Yeah, thin blade, the fiber optic at the very top, and the rear notch is wider. And it's also a little bit deeper, too. I heard a lot of people talking like with the width, but I kind of figured out if I made mine actually a little bit deeper, too, when you're lined up correctly, you can see more of the front side.
Does that shift point of impact or anything? Or
no, because you're looking at the top edge. So whether if you make the rear, the notch itself deeper, it doesn't, if you're looking at it correctly, it doesn't have any effect on.
So in all that dynamic movement that you guys are doing in your competition, are you primary target focus? Are you front sight focus? Are you chasing back and forth?
Yeah, it's definitely, I say it's, and I do a whole spiel on that in my classes. It's a matter of degrees. I mean, in short, the closer and easier the targets are, the more of a target focus you're going to have. The more you're looking at the target, the less you're looking at the gun or the sights, which is more natural. That's a natural thing if you're not trained. The farther and harder away things are, then the more you're going to have to shift some of your focus off the target and onto the sights. But it's definitely not like one or the other. So a lot of people tend to think, you know, well, that target over there, is that a target focus or a, you know, sight focus? And it's not as simple as one or the other.
I mean, so like distance, skill set, target size.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's just very much depends on not just the distance, the target size, your speed, accuracy, balance. For instance, like IDPA and USPSA are two different competitions. IDPA is more accuracy oriented. I probably shoot a target at 7 yards in IDPA the same way I would shoot a target in USPSA at probably 10 or 12 yards because I need to be more accurate. I'm penalized, you know, heavier for hits outside that perfect zone. So it's definitely a different balance. I mean, at the end of the day, like you got to see what you got to see to make your shot. And super close targets, so you don't have to see the sights or really even the gun. And
yeah.
It gets to a certain point and okay, I'm still looking at the target, but I'm not really aiming or even seeing the front sight, but I'm kind of seeing that gun, just the gun itself, the slide in my peripheral vision. Mm-hmm. And then at another certain place, okay, I'm going to have to start actually, if I'm going to be consistent, because you can always not see anything and get lucky, but to be consistent, I got to start seeing my front sight a little bit. Okay, I don't have to line it up in the rear notch or anything, but just see the front sight. And then at the farthest, hardest targets, like, okay, it's the whole, with an iron sight gun, the whole front sight, rear sight alignment and all that.
For that. So when you shoot red dot, what is your mindset with that?
I mean, red dot's a little easier in a lot of ways. I don't shoot them a lot. I definitely have a few guns. The main thing I say right off the bat is that the farther and harder you make the shots and the slower of a pace, more accuracy-oriented bullseye type stuff, everybody's going to do better with a red dot. Mm-hmm. It's just easier. Yeah. I got a 90-yard target. It just literally, I shoot out of the window of my house just for fun sometimes. And with a dot, I can hit that. It's a bigger target, but I can hit that thing way more consistently with a dot than with irons.
Yeah.
And if I'm shooting like a 25-yard plate rack, it's way easier with a dot. Now you start going in like 10-yard plate rack and kind of normal, you know, human-sized targets, you know, 7, 8, 10 yards, 12 yards, it doesn't really make much of a difference. But there, it's more kind of one or the other. You're seeing a dot.
That's because he can burn it down.
With I know. Iron sights. I know.
Yeah. Well, and it depends on the sights. But for me, like if I shoot a plate rack at 10 yards, I don't shoot a plate rack at 10 yards any better with a dot than I do with irons. And you start going distance, then.
Okay, yeah, so you're obviously lucky. You have a range at the house. How often are you actually out training for yourself?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. For myself, not probably as much as I used to. Definitely more on classes. I went from shooting 25 to 30,000 rounds a year. Decent amount, but not a ton. But I went from, when I was competing more, having most of that be for me. And, you know, a little bit of it training. Now it's like I'm shooting probably just as many rounds almost, but a lot of it's just demos and classes. Not nearly as much.
You know, I can totally see that because I do a lot of teaching now, and I get my training in as I'm teaching because I may shoot a drill or two with the students, or if I'm demoing a drill or something like that, I try to use that time to get my trigger time in since I'm teaching two or three times a week or whatever it is on the range.
Yeah. What
do you work on when you go to the range? Like, what is like your go-to?
Well, if I'm, it can be any number of things. The main question I'm asking myself before I go, okay, you got to be totally honest with myself. What do I have the least amount of confidence in right now? Mm-hmm. If I were to had to do something in front of a bunch of people and get one time where it counts, what
can I ask you? That is,
well, and it changes from day to day.
Okay, just depends on how you wake up and side of the bed.
Yeah, it really does. It changes that way. A lot of it would be kind of like, you know, tougher shots at speed, like, you know, partial targets at 25 yards, and to be able to do that consistently, because that's a lot of, in the competitions, that's a lot of what it would come down to. You got some stages that are easy, but then there's other stages where it's got a couple of targets, like half targets at 25 yards, and you know, even the best guys out there, like some of them are going to miss that and some of them aren't, and that's going to make the difference. So I would practice a lot of that, and I would practice earlier on. I did a lot more skills practice, and I give a whole spiel in my classes with skills practice, functional practice. But just more pure shooting, like how fast can I draw, reload, shoot these drills and all this stuff. And then, you know, because I wanted to make Grandmaster, and I did. And then after that, like, well, now what do I want to do? I want to win matches. So well, what do you do in a match? Well, you got to do a lot of different stuff together.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I would actually, which is, I think, something that helped me excel in the competition arena, was I would actually set up and practice stages. Mm-hmm. A lot of people can't do that because the range, or they don't have the stuff or whatever, but just... It doesn't have to be anything crazy, but something where you got to go 2, 3, 4 different spots and shoot a variety of targets, close, far, swinging target, some steel. And obviously you have movement, is you're trying to perfect your movement and everything. And I would do a lot of that. So that's, if I were to go out tomorrow and practice on my own, that's probably what I would do. I would literally go out and I would set up a bunch of different targets, different places.
How often do you work on the fundamentals? Like, you know, grip, trigger, sight limit, sight package. I mean,
I've got probably about a handful of, I would say, I call them golden standard drills, which that I check myself on. Honestly, like, okay, like an El Presidente or a plate rack, some other of the classifiers where I will, that's for me, that's me checking my fundamentals. Okay, I go out, I've done this, whatever, hundreds of times over 20 years. I know what I should do on this drill, and I do it a few times. And if I'm right there where I should be, okay, my fundamentals
do you move on?
Are obviously there.
Or do you if you're right there, do you just go, yep, I'm gonna move on to the next one? And let's say you're a little off, do you now break that down and work on whatever you think the problem was?
Yeah, I mean, for me, if I'm a little off, is when I work on it more. So like if I go out and like, okay, I'm just not on today, this is not working, I'm going to kind of push and I'm going to try to figure it out until I am on. And sometimes maybe you can't do that, but that's generally what I'm trying to do. But if I'm where I need to be, a lot of times then I'll just move on to something else a little more complicated.
So pre this whole ammo crisis that we're in right now, when you went out and trained for yourself, how many rounds were you putting down range?
Not a lot. I typically would probably on a good practice session, 200 to 400, a lot of times like 300, I would say a lot of time. To me, I've never been one of those guys that shot a lot of rounds at one time. I'm definitely more of the slow and steady type of guy. I don't think in 20 years I've hardly ever gone more than a week without shooting something. But I've I've rarely shot more than like 400 rounds at a time. If I go out and shoot 500-600 rounds in a day, it's I actually will get a little sloppy.
Yeah.
And I think it's kind of detrimental.
So if I gave you a box of 50 right now and said, hey, this is all you get for this range day, what would you work on and how would you manage it? Because a lot of guys that are listening to this.
Sure.
They only get.
That's what they got.
Yeah, that's what they got, right? Yeah. So, you know, we always try to help guys out and kind of pass on some knowledge, you know. So how would the 24-time national champion, handle something like that?
I mean, 50 rounds, I'd probably have to think about it a little bit, but you could, like, I would probably do definitely some shorter version drills. So maybe instead of doing, like, El Presidente, which, boom, that's 12 rounds right there. Okay, you go out, you do that four times, that's 50 rounds.
Yeah.
You know, do something, you know, some, like, two reload two with some different distances. Like, okay, I put a target up at 7, put a target up at 15.
Working with your fundamentals with the reload. Yeah, and
you know, draw two shots of 7, reload two shots of 15, maybe do it the other way around a couple times. But I would probably do a few, figure out whether it's 50, if it's 50 rounds, figure it out to where you do some kind of a short standstill skill test shooting for maybe half of those, maybe a little bit more. And then at the end, you know, set something up where you have a little bit of movement and a few different targets. And again, maybe some kind of, I know guys wouldn't have a swinger or something, but just a little like a stage type thing where they can move a couple different positions as opposed to doing all 50 rounds, just standing in one spot, drawing and shooting.
Good.
I'm big on movement. And I think from the practical side of things too, because a lot of incidences involve movement. I mean, even if you're not shooting and moving, you're moving to somewhere.
Well, yeah. And anybody, you know, any law enforcement personnel that's ever been in a shooting, they're not going to plant their feet and shoot and just stand there after the shooting's done.
Yeah.
They're going to be moving. Your target's going to be moving. You're going to be moving. So
just moving, simply moving with a gun in your hand. I mean, so many guys, I don't mean to insult them, but it's just like, I see a lot of people moving. It's just so many guys, the minute you put a gun in their hand and have them move around and do stuff, they lose any kind of athletic ability they ever had, or a lot of it. You can tell the way they're moving.
No, I agree.
They're
100%.
Moving different because they have a gun in their hand. And you don't want that. You want a guy to literally be able to move, whether he can jump over a bunch of hurdles or anything, when that gun is in his hand, to be the same person.
Yeah.
Whether the gun's in his hand or not in his hand. And that's what you see with in the competition shooters too, because you see some bigger guys that are heavier and out of shape.
Dude, you see some guys out there that look, you see some guys out there, you're like, there's no way that guy's gonna be able to move. And next thing you know, that guy that's built like me, a little bigger, a little heavier, man, he is out there running and gunning. I'm like, where the hell did that come from? Like,
and I think a lot of it's because it's all the shooting stuff and the guy, it's all so subconscious that it's just, that guy moves as fast as he can move. That's what I tell people, like, move as fast as you can move, even while you got a gun in your hand and you're doing all this other stuff. That's what you want to be able to do.
So speaking of moving, I'm watching Instagram right now, and I'm watching you go back and forth shooting a plate rack.
Okay, yeah, that was in
California,
a few
I guess.
Months ago.
Yeah, so he says 47 plates, 47 out of 48, or 48 plates, you hit 47 of them.
And that was, it was just time. So that's another favorite drill to do with cops is just, I call it part-time plates. Uh-huh. It's just, you have a certain amount of time. In that case, I think it's 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Given, you can do two or three different spots and like, hey, you know, you stand in one box, you burn a lot of ammo this way. But you know, staying in one box, okay, draw, shoot the plate rack down.
Where the hell am I going to get 48 plates at?
No, so he just keeps popping them up.
Oh, I was like,
the guy's got the string, he keeps pulling them up.
So when you go to the other box, they pull the plate out.
Gotcha.
It's how many plates can you shoot in 30 seconds? I mean, a lot of guys, like, honestly, you do that, kind of lower level guys, some of the really lower level people might not even get 10. They might not even make
what distance you at there?
10 yards.
10 yards.
Generally, yeah. And then some of the better shooters get into the 20s, really. You know, good shooters might get past 30, and then, I mean, to get over 40 is not many people are getting over 40 on that drill.
I just liked it, so just to let you know.
Okay,
so
awesome.
You got another like there.
That's great.
Do you run any carbines or sub-style guns? Or
I do that kind of more for fun, I've got, you know, experience on them. I've shot them plenty and everything. I don't really teach. I mean, I've done a few classes where some guys will come in and they'll – 3 or 4 days, and they want to do one day on.
So not like a whole lot, like three gun, more just pistol competitions.
Yeah, I mean, I focus mostly on pistol. I mean, with the ARs and whatnot, I'm very familiar with that, and I shoot it well. And I honestly think, for the most part, if you can shoot a pistol, you can pick up one of those. Usually, do pretty well. It doesn't necessarily go the other way around. That's just what I've seen. Not that just because you're a pistol shooter, you're going to be a great rifle shooter, but it's just, you know, the fine motor skills in the hands and the wrists and the fingers, it's just, it shows up obviously more with a pistol.
Kind of like if you can dodge a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
Well, yeah.
Kind of like the same thing.
Something like that.
So now do you teach this handstand walking? Do you do a class like that? I'm looking at your Instagram here.
That.
Let me see. That, yeah, I see this.
Yeah.
I walk on my hands sometimes. That's how I stay. Yeah. Try to stay young.
Do you shoot with your feet or? I mean,
I've never tried that.
Never tried that.
I just started doing that one about 20 years ago when I was out of high school. Like, it'd be kind of cool to walk on my hands. So, I would just try it every day a few times, and it took me a while, okay. A month or two, and then once I've got it, I think when I tried it right there in that video, that was just a couple months ago. Uh-huh. I probably hadn't done it in 6 months before that.
Oh, wow. Well, those are pretty impressive because there were like trophies and stuff you could have knocked down at the wall.
Actually, I did that, but that was on video.
Oh, okay. Well, here's another one I pulled up. So, 2009 IDPA National Championship. Look how good looking this guy is.
I was good looking.
Oh, man.
Look at that dude.
10 years ago.
That young dude.
That's like a model.
Yeah, that was 12 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the way that picture looked. That's probably why I shared it.
I mean, looks like.
I was probably 10 pounds lighter back then.
A stud, man.
What are you now, like 110?
Yeah.
I'm like 180 now.
Oh, man. Yeah, huge.
Yeah,
huge.
Dude, I got like 100 pounds on you, bro.
Well, you've got a lot of muscle. 100.
Okay, I'm lying. 110.
Come on now.
Man, so on YouTube, there's a video of you and Taryn Butler, right? I love watching that video. One, because you were like, you're super fast on that plate, and you guys have like a dueling plate off
type thing. Yeah, we did two of those different ones.
Yes, but, and he's shooting his Taryn Butler like from the hip. Yeah. Like, how does that man do that?
Taryn's good at that. I mean, he's just, I guess he's practiced that a lot over the years.
Dude, it just blows my mind that you see him do that on his videos. I'm like, dude, if I tried that, I would hit everything but what I was aiming at.
That's definitely total feel right there.
All right, so check this one out. This is the Taryn Tactical Grandmaster Challenge that he does. So four shots. What is it, under 1 second?
And you're smoking a cigar.
That took me a lot of tries, I'll be honest.
Yeah. What cigar are you smoking in there?
Honestly, it was could have been any number of them. I got a box of people.
Are you a cigar guy?
I am. I'm not huge, but like I honestly, a lot of people have given me cigars in different places. So
what's your go-to?
I got a box. Honestly, I couldn't even say there's the, like, I like vanilla cigars a little bit. There's a place, local place that has them in there, like a buck and a half a piece. And they're the secondhand ones. And for whatever reason, I like those things as good as a $20 cigar.
Man, you know what? As long as you like it, that's all that matters. And that's what you're into, man. You rock that thing and do it, right?
Yeah, that's, I'm not real picky with that, but cigars and whiskey.
Well, we have plenty of whiskey in the hospitality suite.
Oh yeah, well yeah. I might have to.
Yeah, so come on up.
Try some.
Yeah,
okay.
Come on up.
Okay, there's also another video that just it blows my mind. I think you shoot the Ohio State police officer.
Yeah.
Course. Qual, and you double the distance on each.
Yeah, double distance and probably times five if it's one you're thinking of.
Yes. Did you just do that in one take?
That one, the double distance five times, I actually did it. I remember that. I did it five times. I passed it 4 out of 5. And that video was my best one. I had a 24 out of 25. The other three times I passed, I would have got like a 22 or a 23 or something. But I did fail it once. Passed. But I did that five times that day. I went out. Because I did a video way before, which is probably not even still out there, was three times distance. And I'm thinking, you know, I did that.
Man, I'm telling you, I watch.
I could probably do it.
So on YouTube, my wife and my kid totally makes fun of me because on YouTube, I'm totally watching shooting videos or training videos. And I remember watching that video. I'm like, what the hell? Yeah. Like, why? Why? And that's amazing that you're actually doing that just, distance.
Just an idea that I came up with. I mean, it was one of those where it would be hard to be consistent at that. The hardest two were for me were the last two, the 50 yards.
Oh yeah, this is called
83 yards.
This is the Robert Vogel Police Qual Super Challenge.
That's what I came up with, but yeah, that was the last one was like 83 yards, and so that's a little bit of that's a little dicey.
And dude, you rock that thing at 83 yards. I mean, that thing's out of the holster, and it's just like pop, pop. And I was like, what the shit?
Yeah, like
under 4 seconds.
Now I'm looking. I see a This is not shooting, but I do like this shirt. It says, I miss the good old days when everybody wasn't such a pussy, and it's Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, I saw that.
I like that. That's a good.
I saw that in a magazine somewhere. Like, I got to, or on probably on Facebook or something. Like, I got to get that.
Yeah.
Do you get guys on social media that kind of troll you on some of these videos? Like, there's no way you're doing that, or?
I mean, a little bit. Wouldn't say a lot, but yeah, there's been a number of, you do something, there's a few comments that somebody be like, oh, well, he probably did this or whatever it was, and calling it into question. But I mean, you'll have that, I guess.
So are you done competing, or you got anything left in you?
I'm still doing it. I'm just not doing it. Like I used to shoot probably 10 or 12 majors a year and have more sponsors and everything. And I've just kind of backed off of that down to maybe shooting like 3 or 4 matches. Last year was different because of COVID. They got canceled, but I'm still doing it here, and I am just, but it's just not my main focus. And I need to get something done. I need to get some kind of stem cell or something in my knee, because that's the main thing that's holding me back. Okay. I had to pull out of the last qualifier for the world shoot because it just went out on me. And I just couldn't.
Just planting it.
Yeah, I kicked down a door a long time ago. I got an old injury, and it's arthritis, and it's just like I just can't move. And I could have gone and hobbled through it, but I'm just that kind of guy. Like, you know what? I don't want to do that. Like, I'm.
Yeah, you want to, like, if you're going to compete, you want to perform at the level that you know you can.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just, that's how it was.
So I found this one. So this is a fire 800 yard rifle, then stand, draw, and hit 4 plates before hearing the ding.
I'm sorry.
So he's shooting his rifle at 800 yards, and then once he shoots his rifle, he stands up, shoots the plate rack before it goes ding with the rifle ding.
Before he can hear it.
Yeah.
I just got the idea, because I actually have, like, I have a product.
Is this your house?
Yeah.
Okay.
I can shoot 800 yards on my back.
Damn, that's a police range right there.
Look at that concrete pad
and everything.
I got a... Yeah, so that's my 300 Win Mag, and I've done that for years. I got a big, like, it's a 2-foot square target back there at about 800 yards.
Damn.
And, you know, I'm like, okay, I know from the time you fire the shot, like, it probably takes about a second to get there, but the sound takes about, like, 3 to get back. So it was 3.5 seconds from the time you fire the shot to the time you hear the sound. And I've thought, you know what, I could do something else in that 3.5 seconds. I'll just, like, do this video where I shoot it, and then I'll stand up, draw a pistol, and shoot a few. I shoot 3.
Four.
Okay.
Yeah. See, I'll just be happy. You know, he's like, I could do something else in that 3 seconds. I'll just be happy sitting there going, oh, yeah,
I hit it.
Well, that was, like, I've been doing that for like 5 years.
Now, how far away is that?
Those are probably like 10
really?
Yards. And I just,
it would only
work on a day with no wind. So I had to pick a day with no wind. And then my biggest concern was whether you would actually hear the ding in the video. But you can.
Gotcha.
If you listen to that. But that 800 yard part, that was. A 12-year-old child could do that with that gun.
I like the part where you shoot the rifle, you immediately get up, you shoot the plates, and then you raise your hand up like, just listen, boys, and then ding. I'm like, oh.
I wasn't really planning on that, but I was like, I still hear it.
That's pretty good. I wish I had a...
How many followers
he's always trying to come up.
How many followers does he have there?
Not that many. 16,000.
It's not bad.
It's all right. I mean, I've just kind of put stuff on there here and there, not a ton, but I'm always just trying to think. To me, it's...
You need to put more videos on YouTube, because I don't have any of that stuff. And I gotta watch you guys on YouTube.
I have been putting it... Yeah. I've pretty much been putting any shooting video now that I do on Instagram or Facebook on YouTube. I don't think I did back before, but I'm just... To me, honestly, that's kind of one of the more fun things that I've been trying to do lately, just stuff like that. I just a week or two ago, I did one where I shot 2 silver dollars out of the air.
Yeah, I was just watching that one.
And I'm just trying to think of, like, fun things to do.
There's no way. There's no way that you're getting any type of sight package on that.
It's a little bit, but I wouldn't say a lot. That is.
Are you serious?
Did you see that?
No, but I mean, if he can pull it up and let me look at it. Because I think about those trick shots, right? And I think about that stuff, and I'm like, how are these guys doing that? Is it just, are they point shooting there? I mean, are they just picking up maybe like a front sight flash on that coin?
Basically, how I would describe it is, because you don't have much time. Now, with 1 is not too bad, but 2 is hard.
All right, here we go. Let's see what we got here.
I probably have to fast forward to the point where I shoot, because I talk for like 20 seconds.
Oh, do you? Okay. All right, here we go.
But you almost have to look
What the hell?
So you didn't hear the sound. But a lot of it, to me, is throwing it up a certain certain angle. If you look close, you can see them both.
Dude, you could give me a million rounds, I think.
And a shotgun.
A shotgun. I wouldn't be able to do that. That's ridiculous.
It took me, I would never bet money that I could do that, like, every time at all. But with the coin, basically, you're throwing it up, and to me,
it's... What's about how you throw it, right?
A lot of it, how you throw it. So to me, first off, I'm not going to shoot at a 45 degree angle because that's going to go really far. It's not even safe. So you got to, but you don't want to shoot straight up either. So you got to shoot just like kind of out in front of you a little bit, and you toss it. I don't know how far it goes up, maybe 12, 15 feet, if that. And obviously you hold it with your left hand, lay it flat on your, and you, as you come up, you come right into your grip. And then basically what's going to happen is the coin's going to come up. You're going to come up, and you're going to get a sight picture. And as soon as you get that sight picture, you pretty much have to shoot.
On the way up on the first one.
Well, pretty much right when it's there.
At the top. Peak.
Or maybe when it's coming down a little bit. But you don't have time to get a sight picture and then move it over to the coin and shoot. There's no time for that. The instant you get that sight picture, it has to be on the coin. And you have to shoot. And that's... To me, anyways, that's the hardest.
Was that one of your guns with your triggers, like with a?
Yeah, it's just that's
aftermarket trigger.
Yeah, just did my own trigger, nothing fancy, but it's.
How do you shoot just an OEM gun? I mean, just the same.
Yeah, well, I could shoot. Basically, it's just going to, that's probably like a 3 pound trigger gun versus OEM like 5 pound, and. I could do pretty much, I feel like I can do pretty much the same thing. It's just going to be a little bit slower. Like I'm not going to.
So, what's funny with the aftermarket triggers, I put I had a competition gun, 9mm 17. I put an aftermarket trigger in it. Same thing, went from a stock trigger 5 to about, three and a half. Dude, I was horrible with it. I was horrible. It threw off things that I've been doing for years.
Yeah, the timing, and a lot of it's getting used to. I see exactly what you're talking about. I've seen it with a lot of people. What I've seen, the problem is when you shoot a heavier gun, like a 5-6 pound trigger gun, when you have a heavier trigger, it also has a heavier reset. So basically, guys, whether they realize it or not, get used to kind of having that gun, the trigger resets your finger for you a little bit. Mm-hmm. And when you shoot a lighter trigger gun, you can't do that. You have to reset it yourself.
So when you're shooting trigger. When you're shooting fast up close, are you working a sear or a reset on that gun?
I'm not. I actually come off the trigger a little bit.
So that's the one thing that totally I took away from Latham
get it off.
Fast shooters are not resetting that trigger at all.
Yeah.
And that kind of goes against some of the stuff that I learned earlier in my academy days, right? Exactly. From the older firearms instructors.
Yeah, guys like, release the trigger to feel the
click. Yeah, here, feel the click.
Now you're doing too slow.
Yeah.
It's not going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta get off that. There's no logical, when you think about it, there's no logical point to hold, once the bullet has left the barrel, zero reason to hold the trigger back.
So now I will say at distance, I teach to prep that trigger a little bit. So, further away from the target, like those 25-yard target.
Oh, yeah,
like
those 25-yard shots. You definitely have to prep the trigger sometimes. And that's going to depend on your trigger, on your skill level, on the target, and all that. So I definitely would say I'm going to prep the trigger a little bit on some of the harder shots. And it's with a lighter trigger, it's a little bit, with a 3 pound trigger, it's going to be a little bit easier to just accelerate right through that than a 5 pound trigger. You might have to, prep that a little bit. I noticed it more with the harder shots. If it was just like all full size targets at 10 yards, difference between a good trigger and a stock trigger, not as much. But when you start shooting like hard shots fast, like 25 yard shots fast, that's. And it's not, I wouldn't even say a lot. I've done a lot of testing over the years. And the one time I was testing, like, okay, my 2.5 pound trigger versus like my 3.5 pound trigger. And it was like making 3 or 4% difference.
Oh, really? What was the first number you said?
I think like 2.5.
A 2.5 pound trigger on a pistol. Jesus, man. Ouch.
Well, there's guys, some guys get them under 2, even with those, STIs and all that, man. Stuff.
I couldn't imagine.
So,
but a lot of it's just, it's really what you're used to. I mean, if you're not used to it, it's going to be going off a little bit early, whatnot. But
so going back to the throwing the silver dollars and shooting, I was reading some of the comments and I like this one. If I wore panties, they would be on the floor.
I know that guy.
Pretty good. I like that, man.
Now, the reality is, it's not quite like that.
I like that, man.
You don't have chicks banging on your door because you're a professional shooter.
Yeah, not quite like that.
Well, that one guy does.
Which guy?
Taryn, dude.
Oh, Taryn. Yeah, yeah. I know Taryn pretty well. I've actually been out there quite a few times.
Yeah.
Is that his, like, is that like at his house or in his backyard or?
It's at his business property.
Okay.
So yeah, he actually has a house probably 10 minutes away from there.
How does that go over in the great state of California?
He's able to do it. I mean, he gets complaints and stuff from what I hear, and he's cracked down on, he's built some like overhead baffles and stuff. And he only does it at certain times of the day. So he's kind of concerned about that, but he's still able to do it. So.
Well, there you are out there. Right.
That was in September. Mm-hmm. I was out there and
yeah,
we had Olivia Munn, the movie star, which I don't.
Oh yeah. He's big into training, like Keanu Reeves John Wick. And
that's amazing.
He's been, back when Top Shot came out that first time, we were both kind of out there in the beginning of that a little bit. It's 2010. And I think after that, he seemed to get a lot more attention. A lot of movie stars, whatnot, he's had out there. And
yeah. Now, do you ever have conversations with like the Army guys, Navy guys that are top tier in their respective fields, and talk with them and know those guys? And
yeah, I mean, I've done some gigs with those guys. Mm-hmm. I hesitate to name because they're secret about everything. But right. you name them. I mean, The Navy and the Army and the
are they
Marines
receptive to your style of training?
Honestly, very, very much so. Like, that was probably the biggest surprise the first time I did that. I'm kind of going in there not knowing what to think and thinking these guys were going to be all business. And but they were actually, I show up and half of them are wearing IPSC rigs. They're like, they're actually these guys shooting USPSA, and they're asking me all about competition. I mean, it wasn't a competition class, but it was, right. They were very much interested in that, and they were not, they just wanted, how do you, shooting better.
Because once you get the gun in your hand, it's the same, no matter what rig you come out of, once the gun's in your hand, you're doing you. You mean you're doing the.
Yeah, that's in their mind. I think from the way I read it, in their mind, like the whole, obviously I'm not going in there expecting to teach tactics, and they obviously weren't looking to, they didn't want any of that. They just, it was all about shooting, and they were. To me, that was nice, I guess, in the fact that it just seemed like they totally, whatever they did with the shoot house and which we did the shoot house too, but tactically was totally different. And this is just all on shooting, man. We want to shoot better, and it's all, with time and score, and it was real, real competitive and everything. And then they did have really good guns. Like they had.
Yeah, I was fixing to say.
I mean, when I teach, it's just how it is. Like when I teach most cops, SWAT teams, whatever, they're going to have closer to stock guns. But those guys did. They were doing the same things the guns that I did. And it was their armors that were doing it, not really them.
Yeah.
But they had tricked out triggers.
They're doing all that.
They had whatever, the magwells and the sights and everything. So. Yeah.
So do you kind of talk shop with them as far as, hey, shooting targets as opposed to shooting people? What's that? I mean, is there?
I don't think there was really much of that really at all. Mm-hmm. It was just more on just the skill set and the shooting. And so we did a lot of drills and plate racks and things like that. So
how many rounds you guys go through?
Those guys shot a lot. I would typically demo something once or twice, and then a lot of times normal classes guys would maybe shoot the drill three or four times, five times. Those guys would shoot it 15 times. I mean, they just had endless amounts of ammo and basically shoot it.
Were they all trying to like outdo each other?
Yeah, usually that's what it was. Yeah, I mean, it was just
outdo
like,
you?
Well, sure. Yeah, put up whatever I did, and then they're trying to beat that.
Just step up and really put it to them.
I mean, that's the idea.
Yeah. Talk shit to them.
Oh, I don't know. There's too much of that. It was cool, friendly, but they were competitive.
Yeah,
That was more so than other guys. Like they were trying to beat the score, and they weren't assholes about it or anything. But they were, and there's two or three of them. I get a group of 10 or 12 guys. There's going to be maybe two or three guys who are a little better than the other ones, and mm-hmm. it's going to be them that's probably going to win.
Yeah,
whatnot. But they're really going for that. So no, pushing themselves.
You got any more good videos over there?
Those are the ones that really caught me.
Probably the ones, right?
Well, is there anything that you got coming down the pipe? Anything that you want to get out there?
I mean, not specifically, really. Just like I said, I'm doing a lot of classes here and there. And, hopefully this whole ammo shortage thing.
Push those sights.
A little bit. My sights, yeah. Go buy my sights.
Go buy your sights.
It's right off of, VogelDynamics.com, Google Robert Vogel, whatever they come up, and on Amazon, which that's been a whole nightmare dealing with him the last year. But
yeah. Now, are you doing the shooter symposium again this year?
Yeah, I am. I'm scheduled to. I think they put in October. It was supposed to be last April, got canceled in October. I think it's going to be next October again.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm supposed to go there. But yeah, that's been a good time. And that's trying to think where that, how far that is from here. I guess that's.
It's not too far. I mean, it's a
still trying to
couple hour drive or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some good guys that go down there and shoot. And,
yeah, no, that's an event there. I mean, that's nice for me is, you know, just talking to the other instructors and everything like that. And there's a lot of time. It's the first time I got to meet a lot of those guys.
Yeah.
First when I went 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool.
Yeah. Well, good, man.
Well, man, I just want to say thank you. Thanks for coming out to TTPOA and hope we, you know, show you guys a good time.
Yeah,
and,
for sure, man. No, it's an honor to be here. I appreciate you asking me. And
yeah, and if you guys, you know, well. If you need anything from us while you're here, man, you just reach out and we'll do our best to help you out. And hope you have good classes. And you got to come back, Region 7. Yep, you have to come back. And
yeah, for sure. No, definitely. Yeah. I hope to.
We'll exchange.
I'm always looking for a different place, new place. Yeah. So
we'll exchange numbers and we'll get after this conference and
okay,
we'll connect and.
Awesome.
Stuff like that.
Awesome.
So do you do your own booking or do you have your wife do it? And normally it's wives do that.
Cause, yeah, I don't have a wife. So.
Okay.
I do my own.
Okay.
I do my own basically. And in some places, it just depends. Some places actually will set up. I mean, if it's something where they set it up, then they set it up. But if they don't do that, then I do it. Yeah, so it's all on my website. But yeah.
All right. We'll
he's good about it. He'll help you out.
Yeah.
He'll help you out.
Okay.
So,
yeah. All right, man. Well, awesome, man.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
You bet.